A Lecture Hall at Oxford University, 2008. While global markets collapsed and millions lost their homes, economics students sat through lessons on perfect market equilibrium. Yuan Yang raised her hand. How is any of this relevant to what's happening outside? Her professor had no answer. This wasn't an isolated frustration. From Paris to Harvard, students were walking out of lectures, demanding an economics education that actually addressed climate change, inequality, and financial instability. Their rebellion exposed a deeper truth. The economic thinking that shaped our world for decades was fundamentally broken. What we needed wasn't reform, we needed revolution. Picture a donut as a compass for human survival. The hole represents deprivation, people lacking food, water, healthcare, education, housing. The outer edge represents ecological overshoot, climate breakdown, biodiversity collapse, ocean acidification. Between these boundaries lies the donut itself, the safe and just space where humanity can thrive. This visual reframes everything. For 70 years, we've measured progress through GDP growth, celebrating rising numbers regardless of whether people flourish or ecosystems die. The donut asks differently: how do we meet everyone's needs within Earth's means? The stakes are existential. Despite unprecedented improvements, doubled life expectancy, dramatically reduced poverty, we're simultaneously falling short and overshooting. Billions lack essentials, while we've crossed multiple planetary boundaries. Since 1950, global population nearly tripled, GDP increased sevenfold, and fertilizer consumption increased eightfold. Cities are responding. Amsterdam redesigned its entire economic strategy around the donut, asking how 800,000 residents can thrive without depleting resources or harming distant ecosystems. This is an abstract theory. It's practical policymaking that acknowledges physical reality. Mainstream economics centers on a character nobody has ever met: rational economic man. Solitary, calculating, insatiable, and entirely fictional. While Adam Smith portrayed humans as complex beings driven by self-interest and moral sentiments, economists simplified this into a cartoon calculator with perfect knowledge and unwavering rationality. Nobody actually behaves this way. Toddlers spontaneously help struggling adults. Strangers donate blood to people they'll never meet. Research reveals humans as fundamentally social and reciprocating, Earth's most sophisticated cooperative species. We practice strong reciprocity, helping others and punishing free riders, even at personal cost. We're not isolated calculators, but deeply interdependent beings who rely on emotional intuitions and look to others for behavioral cues. This matters because stories about human nature become self-fulfilling prophecies. When economic models assume selfishness, institutions reward selfishness. Seeking scientific respectability, 19th-century economists borrowed physics' differential calculus and created theories comparing markets to pendulums, stable systems tending toward balance. Reality proved messier. The economy doesn't behave like a machine. It behaves like an ecosystem. Consider starling murmurations, thousands of birds creating breathtaking patterns without central control. Each follows simple rules based on neighbors' movements, yet collectively, they create complex, unpredictable beauty. Markets work similarly through feedback loops, George Soros called the reflexivity of markets. The 2008 crash revealed equilibrium thinking's danger. Major institutions used models that missed Hyman Minsky's insight that stability breeds instability. When markets feel safe, people take bigger risks, creating conditions for collapse. Systems thinking illustrates how inequality emerges from dynamics where wealth accumulates more wealth. Computer simulations show how small chance differences amplify into vast wealth gaps through feedback loops, like tiny snowballs becoming avalanches. This perspective transforms economic practice. Instead of imagining control panels where we pull levers, we must become gardeners, developing sensitivity to feedback loops, understanding delays between actions and consequences, and recognizing that small interventions at leverage points can create massive shifts. Economists once promised inequality would naturally diminish with growth, Simon Kuznets' inverted U-curve. Research demolished this myth. The richest 1% now own more wealth than the other 99% combined. This destroys more than morality. It corrodes systems. Unequal societies suffer higher mental illness, drug use, and community breakdown. Inequality concentrates power, threatens democracy, and fuels status competition. IMF economists found striking parallels between 2008 and 1929, both followed extreme income concentration. The solution isn't waiting for redistribution, it's designing distributive economies. Five areas matter most. Land redistribution historically reduces inequality, as post-WW2 Japan and South Korea proved. Money creation could be democratized through people's QE, issuing money directly to households, or complementary currencies like Kenya's Bangla Pesa. Enterprise ownership offers alternatives like Cleveland's Evergreen Cooperatives. Technology ownership becomes crucial as automation advances. Think robot dividends like Alaska's Permanent Fund. Knowledge, treated as commons, demonstrated by open source software. These aren't fantasies. They're functioning models redistributing wealth, time, and power throughout society. The grow first, clean up later myth has proven disastrous. China and India's rapid industrialization created severe ecological crises, demonstrating that economies must be regenerative from the start. Our industrial system follows a degenerative linear model: take, make, use, lose. This caterpillar economy breaks natural cycles. Plastic production has increased 20-fold since 1964, with only 9% recycled. The circular economy offers an alternative, harnessing solar energy to continually transform materials through cradle-to-cradle thinking. Materials belong to two cycles. Biological nutrients, soil, plants, animals, return safely to the biosphere, while technical materials, plastics, metals, circulate continuously. In this butterfly economy, companies like Interface create carpet tiles designed for easy disassembly and recycling. Cities can be regenerative too. Singapore's Gardens by the Bay combines architecture with living systems. Stockholm's Royal Seaport District aims for fossil fuel freedom by 2030. These generous cities feature buildings that sequester carbon and treat wastewater. Despite regenerative design's potential, pioneers face obstacles within degenerative systems. GDP ignores environmental costs, while quarterly profit pressures discourage long-term investments. Companies like Patagonia prove profitable models can align with regenerative principles, but systemic change requires new success metrics and financial incentives. Economic growth divides people with religious fervor. No country has ended human deprivation without growth, yet none has ended ecological degradation with it. Classical economists like Adam Smith predicted growth would eventually stop in a stationary state, while John Stuart Mill welcomed it, noting there would still be as much scope as ever for all kinds of mental culture and moral and social progress. Today's keep-on-flying advocates argue growth enables democracy and progress, with technology decoupling GDP from ecological impacts. The prepare for landing camp counters that sufficient decoupling isn't feasible. The fundamental problem? Our economies depend on continual growth, whether or not it makes us thrive. We need economies that make us thrive, whether or not they grow. Growth addiction has three roots. Financial addiction stems from finance's perpetual "what's the rate of return?" question. Political addiction emerges from revenue needs and unemployment fears. Social addiction manifests through consumer culture and inequality. If we create economies that thrive regardless of growth, GDP might bob and dip naturally, more like kite surfing than desperately maintaining altitude in an airplane. The most exciting economic insights emerge from outside traditional economics. Psychology, ecology, physics, and complexity science challenge conventional assumptions. Student-led movements like Rethinking Economics have built coalitions with frustrated employers, prompting some universities to embrace pluralistic education, though prestigious institutions remain resistant. The most promising economists are innovators evolving the economy through experiments, social enterprises, platform cooperatives, circular economy initiatives. Their impact appears in new business models like Patagonia's environmental stewardship, collaborative commons like Wikipedia, and regenerative agriculture. Transformation happens at multiple levels, moving savings to ethical banks, using time banking, creating purpose-driven enterprises, exercising parental leave rights, contributing to knowledge commons, joining aligned movements. We're the first generation to fully comprehend our planetary impact and potentially the last with opportunity to change course. We possess unprecedented capabilities to eliminate extreme poverty and ecological degradation. The challenge? Create economic systems enabling human prosperity while regenerating our planet. The economy isn't something that happens to us. It's something we create through daily choices. The donut isn't just a diagram. It's an invitation to become architects of an economy where people and planet genuinely thrive together.